Welcome to the Point Forward podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
The Point Forward podcast. What a podcast we have, or we have some great games to talk about. In any event, the Milwaukee Bucks defeat the Brooklyn Nets in seven games, overtime, game seven, absolute thriller, one of the biggest moments in Milwaukee Bucks history. You saw it unfold. Now let's talk about what we saw. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Point Forward podcast, Milwaukee Bucks Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And on the other line is Jim Ozarski. He was at the Barclays Center watching game seven unfold as the Milwaukee Bucks held on for dear life, managed to stave off Kevin Durant just long enough. It goes to overtime. Not a lot of scoring in overtime, but the Bucks do come out on top. They win ultimately 115-111 thanks to a couple late free throws. We won't talk about those. Those were weird, but like whatever. They won by a possession, basically. And we'll move on to the Eastern Conference Finals. We don't yet know if that's Philadelphia or Atlanta as we record this. We'll get you up to date on an Eastern Conference Finals preview in a couple days, so stay tuned for that as well. But now we're looking back at one of the biggest series in Milwaukee Bucks history. I don't know if that's overstating it. I don't think it is. And Jim, I guess right off the top, it's hard to encapsulate everything that happened in Game 7, let alone the three games since we last podcast. When last we checked, it was 2-2. So we'll start with Game 7, but just give me some visuals that stick out to you, some lasting things that you saw firsthand when you were at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. When you think of this game, what's really going to stick out? What are the memories that are really going to resonate for you?
I don't think I'll ever forget Kevin Durant's shot. I understand they didn't win, and that wasn't to win the game. But that type of performance, and also Giannis, I think when you talk about visuals, I can't separate those two players doing what they did over the final five games of that series. They do it differently. I know Bucks fans, and it seems like NBA players and NBA pundits don't seem to like the way Giannis does things, but it was historic as well. So there's that, like that. I can't separate those performances. But then it would be, JR, I think the celebration. I was curious. I wondered if the Bucks would emote. Does this make sense? They have been so it's all about the championship. It's about winning the title. It's about the journey is not over. And I was wondering if we would see the handshakes, business trip. And to see Brooke Lopez slam his hands on the B at center court for a franchise at which he's their all-time leading scorer. To see Giannis, forearm shiver Mike Budenholzer and PJ Tucker hug everyone from, Pat Connaughton to the owners, to see Thanasis run to the section of Greek fans that he bought tickets for. I haven't covered a championship. I haven't covered a team that has gone, won the final, to get to the final. So, I'm not going to say it was over the top, but it was there. So I think that, of course, will stick with me as well.
You mentioned the way Giannis does it and seeing that juxtaposed with what Kevin Durant did. And I asked this question previously, and I think it's a fair question, and I think it maybe even has an answer now. Can a team win a championship with Giannis as the main ingredient? And what I mean by that is you've got a Kevin Durant who can win on any team, no matter how many superstars are around him, no matter what franchise he's playing for. My example was he could go play for Memphis tomorrow and Memphis would instantly be a favorite to win the NBA title. Like, he's at that level. And he proved it. That shot he hit, I just assumed it was going in. And I think we might, as Bucks observers, sort of just forget that that was an incredible degree of difficulty. It's amazing it went in, and amazing that his toes just happened to be on the three-point line, so it wasn't a game winner, but rather a game tire that sent the game to overtime. But, my question was, can Giannis, who is not quite that kind of player, he's dominant, but he's not a I can do whatever I want from any part of the court kind of guy. And in fact, he's a liability with his free throw shooting, and that limits his options. And we saw some examples of that. But Giannis just went out and proved it. I mean, he had a tremendous series. He put the team on his back at times. I mean, there were certainly other guys that you can point to here, and we will, but they got through it, you know, as great as Kevin Durant was. Kevin Durant was awesome. And yes, guys got hurt for the Nets. They didn't have Kyrie for the last three plus games of this series. They didn't have James Harden at 100% at any point in this series. But Giannis just got through a massive, massive roadblock. And I think this is kind of a referendum on Giannis. Totally unfair in most regards, but having him go head-to-head with Kevin Durant and having his way work and getting through as close as it was, to me, that's super encouraging. To me, it's an actual announcement. Like, you know what? Giannis and the way the Bucks are built, that is a championship-caliber team.
Yeah, it's interesting because Giannis is unlike any other, you know, big man that people have seen. And then, you know, it's just not sexy, right? Like he does it differently. But I think he definitely has proven the last few years that, yeah, you can build a championship team around him. It's just going to have to look a little different. And, you know, you mentioned that sort of the fairness of narratives. Unfortunately, that is the monster David Stern created all those years ago. Yes, it's a team sport, but the individual in this team sport is rightfully, wrongly, you know, put in different categories. Every one of them deals with it. You know, not so much a Chris Middleton, but when you win MVPs, defensive players of the year, when you sort of advance into those realms, JR, it's just, that's a natural part of the conversation. And so I think Giannis, they're not in the final yet. No championship has been won, but the way he played 50 minutes to take some of the defensive assignments he did, whether or not it was, you know, quote unquote, head to head with Kevin Durant. I think this was a big one. If they lose in these finals, I think it restarts again. But for now, I think he showed, you know, how good of a player he truly is.
If I were to say the Bucks got lucky, I'm curious to know what your reaction that would be. And primarily I'm thinking about the Kevin Durant shot with his toes on the line. You know, it wasn't close necessarily. I mean, it was close in that his foot wasn't over the line or anything. I mean, it was clear his toes were on the line. But, you know, we're talking about the thinnest of margins, keeping that from being a game-winning shot. And you could also say, well, the fact that he made the shot, I mean, that's unlucky for the Bucks, or the fact that Brook Lopez really gave them a possession that they may not have even had by completely forgetting what was on the shot clock. That could be something that you could say, well, that's the Nets getting lucky. I don't know if it's fair to say that the Bucks just caught the biggest break of the night, a massive break. Obviously, they put themselves in position to win that game, and they were able to gut through, you know, an overtime period when everybody was truly fatigued, and they lose P.J. Tucker, who fouls out. They still have Middleton and Drew Holiday playing great defense to keep Kevin Durant as mitigated as possible. But if I were to say, you know what, they really just got a break here. I mean, they didn't score more points than the Nets overall in this series. Is that fair? How would you respond to that?
In the course of championship histories, there's always breaks along the way. Very, very rarely. I mean, there's a handful of just the truly dominant wire to wires. There's always something. And I think honestly, though, the break came, maybe that's not the right word, but with James Harden getting hurt and Kyrie Irving getting hurt. Look, I think the Nets were the better team. But they didn't have two of their three best players. The Bucks had their full complement. So if there's a break, that was it. You know, in terms of the shot, no, Kevin Durant just said good. You know, in terms of, yeah, get it, you know, I think the Nets got a break, obviously, because Brook Lopez just, you know, he admitted he made a mistake. He when they reset, he didn't look to see that there was time on the shot clock. Mike Budenholzer said it was on him, you know, probably meaning he probably should have, you know, reemphasized that, hey, there's five on the shot clock. It's not just the game clock situation. I think the break was that two of the four best players in the series did not play all of the games. But hey, that's what it is. Now you look forward, JR. Almost everybody else is hurt for the Bucks. We'll do it. We'll revisit all that in a later pod. But I think, the Bucks earned it. They won. And, if Kevin Durant's toe would have been an inch behind, and we're talking about a season recap, you know, that's not a break either. You know, that's just Kevin Durant being a basketball god, you know?
Yeah.
that's not a bad break one way or the other.
We talked about whether or not the Bucks could be seen as a title favorite. Oddsmakers like him as a title favorite now, which is interesting since we last chatted the Utah Jazz in an outcome that is actually far crazier than what we saw with Bucks Nets, losing six games to a Clippers team that lost Kawhi Leonard when the series was tied at two. I don't think anybody gives the Clippers a snowball's chance at that point. They go out and win the next two games, including one, of course, in Utah, and they wind up moving on. They are facing now the Suns in the first round of the Western Conference Finals. Bucks, like we said, they're going to get Philadelphia or Atlanta. We've talked about how those matchups are favorable in the past. The Philly's got the better seed, but the Bucks have had very good success against them. And Atlanta is kind of the party crasher at this point. Bucks have matched up fine with them as well in the past. Are the Bucks it? Is this the team now? I know you speak very highly of Phoenix. I still feel like that's a pretty big fly in the ointment. How would you look at it now?
Oh, yeah, the Bucks are, to me, the favorite to win. I think there's no doubt about that. I mean, a healthy Joel Embiid maybe, you know, pushes that series, but he's not healthy. Los Angeles is not healthy. Phoenix, Chris Paul has COVID. I don't know when that's going to go. Atlanta is not healthy with DeAndre Hunter. So, yeah, no.
Or Bogdan. Bogdan Bogdanovic hasn't been playing either. I mean, he's been playing like 25 minutes a game.
But. Yeah, so, no, the Bucks are the favorite, and that's a different – so it's almost back to 2 years ago. they are the championship favorite in my view. But I think what's different is, I wrote about this over at jsonline.com, and Giannis, for all of his the mental, I don't want to call it a trick, but he's trying to stay in the moment, not look ahead, not look back, but yet he allows that this team is built differently from an intestinal, maybe mental standpoint. Pat Connaughton, Chris Middleton, Brooke Lopez, kind of the core guys left from 2 years ago, they've admitted that they're more ready for what's to come. And one of the reasons I think they beat Brooklyn, JR, look, they said all year long, we talked about this, that when they lost five straight, six out of eight, played 500 ball in December, and Bucks fans are wringing their hands over what that means. And I go with the players. The players said, 2 years ago, they weren't ready to get punched in the mouth by Toronto. They didn't know how to react to losing, going up two, that was normal. Losing two, that's not normal. Losing three, playing an elimination game, they didn't know what to do. Clearly against Brooklyn, JR, going down 2-0 did not faze them. Playing an elimination game, two in a row didn't faze them. So yeah, I think not only are they the favorite to win an NBA title in my view, now they're perhaps more ready to do so.
Yeah, that's crazy to think. I mean, this has been a very tough road so far, and they've handled it with aplomb. I mentioned Bogdan Bogdanovic, and if Atlanta ends up being the team that advances, that'll certainly be top of mind for Bucks fans. Even if not, we've revisited this on various junctures during the year. What happens if that sign and trade that was obviously a little bit under the table and ultimately cost the Bucks a second round draft pick and an NBA investigation? If that had gone through, then the Bucks would be, more equipped to handle this postseason because they'd have another great shooter on the team. And that would have come in handy because the team did not shoot well in this Nets series at all against what we perceived to be a subpar defense. Granted, they played quite a bit better, Brooklyn did, on defense in this series, but with Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton at times struggling, Bogdan would be a great fit, right? Whether, obviously assuming he's healthy. But I now, you know, the sliding door might be if this team gets Bogdanovich, they don't have P.J. Tucker. They don't make that move middle of the season to get P.J. Tucker. And maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe that is still a move that they make, because P.J. Tucker is still something that this team didn't have, you know, wouldn't have had middle of the season. But it's very difficult to overstate what P.J. Tucker meant in this series. He was the guy tasked with guarding Durant much of the time. Obviously, his minutes load went way up. The rotation was, you know, down to almost nothing. Pretty much a six-man rotation with Pat Connaughton, it seemed like, in game, you know, game seven. It wasn't quite that, but it was awfully close. So I don't know if you see the sliding door where they don't get P.J. Tucker, but I do think that's worth noting. And I didn't know P.J. Tucker was this level of good. I mean, he is just nasty. He's just really tough to work with, and frustrated the Nets on you know, obviously defensively, and also had some pretty nice splashes offensively. Just tell me everything. How do you look at P.J. Tucker in this series? And what do you think of my sliding door theory that the Bogdan trade means no P.J. Tucker and maybe means they don't beat the Nets?
Yeah, well, to address that, I think that's a fair, you know, fair dots to connect. I mean, DJ Wilson was supposed to be part of the sign and trade with, you know, Sacramento. So that was part of the piece that went to Houston, you know, salaries to match and young player, all that stuff. You know, Bogdanovich's salary, I don't know offhand what that would have been. PJ Tucker's prorated salary. I mean, they're, you know, again, does DJ Augustin get signed? Yeah, there's a lot of sort of moving pieces that happened after Bogdanovich deal did not go down that were part of the trade to get PJ Tucker. Now, I think there's always, you know, salary caps. Yes, there's hard caps and exceptions and all those things. But I think, you know, who's to say? Maybe that could have worked. Maybe, you know, the Bucks ownership at that point would have said still, hey, you know, we'll take whatever sort of cap hits and taxes and all those things. But yeah, that's definitely going to be something to think about. And Tucker, look, I'll be honest. I said this from the beginning. I didn't know, you know, at 36 years old, you know, coming off, you know, he had the ankle and the calf in Houston. He re-aggravated it once he got to Milwaukee. I wasn't sure what he had left in that way. And he clearly proved he could still give them what they needed in that series. I think going forward, JR, you mentioned the six-man rotation. I don't think they're going to need to do that going forward. You know, Bucks fans, it's hilarious, JR. It's like, you know, a year, 2 years ago, why does Bud play all the bench guys? And then when he doesn't play the bench guys, it's why doesn't Bud play the bench guy? I mean, such is the life of of fandom and the head coach. But yeah, the Bucks were so clear on this early, JR, that you're not going to stop Kevin Durant. It was just, if he's going to score 30 to 40, which he is, you want him to do it on 30 shots. And that's what PJ Tucker did. You know, they used up all the fouls. I think that was an adjustment Bud made, you know, after game two when he pulled Tucker after two early ones. I think that was, you know, he tried to just let it play out, you know, foul out, you know. And clearly that sort of mentality and Tucker's willingness to sort of eat it for his team, you know, it's almost like I don't want to call it the starter who's got to just take the pounding in baseball for the bullpen that day, because generally that means your team loses. I think what it meant for Tucker was you're the one who's going to get abused and have to deal with this. So everyone else can succeed, and meaning that the Bucks, you know, sum is greater than you know, Kevin Durant's solo part, if you will. So yeah, I think Tucker was, he wasn't the MVP of the series. I'd still put that on Giannis Antetokounmpo, but you know, PJ Tucker was right there.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. And going back to sort of the chorus of frustration with the coaching in particular, it is funny. I do understand some of the frustrations, and I think they're worth interrogating. But it is exactly the opposite of the concern that happened last year. I shouldn't say exactly the opposite. It's a little more nuanced, but a lot of curiosity about where Bobby Portis was played not at all in the last three games of the series. And, you know, I think it's fair to ask the question. I mean, the answer to me is kind of obvious because they just don't think of him defensively as a guy who can slow down, you know, who can work when you're trying to slow down Brooklyn. And, you know, keeping it as tight as it was, Bryn Forbes wasn't out there very much anymore. That was a reaction. You know, they saw what wasn't working. Coach Mike Budenholzer presumably saw what wasn't working. And we heard a lot about them not playing their three best players a lot together in game one of the series when things went so wrong. And there was a quick adjustment to that. It was pretty much, at times, it was basically just Giannis and Chris Middleton in this series. And he was definitely going to go down with the ones who brought him in game seven. One of the guys, Drew Holiday, is really interesting. I mean, he hit a couple of the biggest shots of the night in game seven. Very impressive stuff late in the game because he was on track at one point to have the worst shooting performance in playoff history. Nothing was working for him, and that was true throughout this series. He had some good stretches, but really some tough ones. Game five, I should say, in the fourth quarter, after having a pretty good game, he really fell apart. Could not hit a shot inside, outside, went away from shooting for a while, and then in the fourth quarter, you know, he was just like, you know what, I'm still Drew Holiday. I'm going to take a big three. I'm going to take an inside. You know, I think three baskets late that were really key. So that was impressive to me because he's still contributing on the defensive end and still extremely valuable to have out there as a guy who can run your offense. But, you know, we weren't seeing, you know, he was Eric Bledsoe for much of the series, a guy who could defend but wasn't giving you the outside shot, wasn't giving you the offense you need. I guess my concern here is, do you have any explanation for what happened to Drew Holiday in this series? It's just staggering to me how special he was this regular season and up through the Heat series and then just sort of fell off a cliff. I mean, maybe it is as simple as saying the defense he has to put forth is just sapping whatever energy he has on the other end of the floor. And I guess, do you see that things will change when they get a different opponent in there?
Yeah, he'll never say it in the moment, and maybe his professional pride won't ever let him say it, even if, you know, it's the summer and the Bucks have had a parade. But I do think being asked to handle Kyrie Irving, being asked to guard Kevin Durant. Look, that was Drew Holiday when Kevin Durant attempted the exact same shot at the end of overtime that he hit over PJ Tucker. That was Drew Holiday helping to force that. So, yes, I do think that plays a role. You know, in terms of, look, he just had a bad series. What did he shoot, like 36%? Shots that I don't, I mean, he's such an unflappable guy, JR. And then I saw him, he missed like this little open 8-footer that, and he just sort of shouted, you know, into oblivion. I think, and he even admitted, you know, a couple days ago that it had gotten hard for him to sort of stay up. I mean, he's missed layups and floaters and, I mean, not just threes, you know. I think you just chalk it up to a bad series, and that happens, you know. I think all players, for the most part, if they play long enough and have enough playoff, you know, they're going to have one of those series. The question is, does your team survive and you get another shot? And here Drew Holiday is. I would be stunned, JR, if going forward we see that again. I mean, he's going to be defending the best backcourt player, but it's not Kevin Durant and it's not Kyrie Irving, because his teammates also don't have to have those responsibilities. So, and then also, but to your point, he took those threes. He didn't. Yes, maybe he tried to facilitate early in the second half of Game 7, which I think helped. You know, he did have assists that mattered. But yeah, it was, you have an open three, you take it. If you're being paid $160 million, you take that shot. And when you're paid $160 million, you're probably good enough to make it. And to his credit, he did. He scored 9 points, 3 of 5 in the fourth quarter, and then helped come up with one of the two big stops in overtime. I think when you're talking about a big three, JR, Chris Middleton, same boat. Look, he had his rally moments. Chris Middleton had games 3 and 4, but he shot like barely 40% on the series. Game seven was just horrific. If Drew Holiday wasn't having his night, Chris Middleton was trending toward an all-time game seven. Like, what was that moment? And then guess what? He scores 11 points in the fourth quarter. He hits the game-winning turnaround off the pick and roll that Bucks fans have seen for what? the last handful of years with Giannis Antetokounmpo, 14-footer mid-range, hashtag mid-range. And then he also forces Kevin Durant. He's the one who gets KD when PJ Tucker comes out. And again, $140 million, JR, that, you know, for all the bad that comes with that for Chris Middleton, the guy, I think, proved why he's an all-star and proved why he gets that contract, because he made the shot and he made the stop.
Yeah, there's no doubt in my mind this team doesn't win this game in a previous year. You know, you talked about the experience that they've had and the zen that they've sort of achieved seemingly after every win or loss. You're not really seeing too much up or down. And there's no doubt that this team doesn't come through if this is still the 2019 version, the unseasoned 2019 version of this team. Chris Middleton is so laid back. You see it in the post-game interviews. Not a guy who's going to get rah-rah after a Game 7 win. And it just seemed like, you know, another day at the office for him with the one of the biggest shots of the game, like you said, after struggling as he did. Jrue Holiday still handed out 6.3 assists per game in that series. He was still very active, played close to 40 minutes, but you're right. Shot 26% from three-point range, just a little bit better than Giannis, who shot 20. Really, he also shot 26%, a couple percentage points lower. But for all the emphasis on Giannis, please don't shoot threes, Giannis. Jrue Holiday was not better, much better at all in this series. So, but you're right. I definitely envision against the 76ers or the Hawks, we're going to see a different Jrue Holiday. Going back real quickly to the rotation, I think Game 7 is always going to be a game where you're down to your five or six guys, you know, if it's as intense as this was. That didn't surprise me. Not seeing Bobby Portis at all in a couple of these games really did shock me. To see that he was a DNP in the last three games of this series, I mean, that's a guy who's been energy off the bench, and especially for a team that has struggled shooting like they did in this series, it seems like that's a guy that you'd want out there. And defensively, I mean, that's not his strong suit. He's not, I guess in my mind, he's not horrible on defense, but, you know, he's not who you put out there to try to stop a team that has superstar players on it. What do you think was behind that? Is it more than just this is the matchup that they went with? But because, you know, that was some surprise. It was surprising for a lot of people that not to see Bobby Portis at all in 5-7.
Yeah, no, there's nothing more to it. It was strictly, look, credit to Brooklyn first for taking Bryn Forbes completely out of the series. That's Brooklyn's thing. That I don't know if anyone would have expected that. I mean, Brooklyn played, even without their two of their three best players and a hobbled Jeff Green, clearly, even in Game 7 with that foot injury, you know, they did that. And so Mike Budenholzer, Bobby Portis is the back. Okay, so in old school basketball terms, Bobby Portis is the backup center. So guess what? When Brook Lopez, yes, he's the starting center, so he's going to get that run. And then what the Bucks decided to do was they went small. You know, Steve Nash, I had wondered if he would go big with DeAndre Jordan at times. They elected not to. Blake Griffin was their center. When Blake Griffin came out, it was Bruce Brown. And Mike Budenholzer elected to have Brook Lopez guard Bruce Brown at times because he felt the offensive and defensive advantage was still there. And quite frankly, it worked, you know, in Game 7. So Bobby Portis is the backup center. When Brook Lopez came out, guess what? Giannis was the five. And this is what we talked about, JR, back when PJ Tucker was acquired. It gave the Bucks more defensive versatility for specifically this series. There was no big in Brooklyn. Giannis is the big when he's out there, right? And so that's what happens. If the starting center doesn't play, guess what? The backup center isn't going to play, especially the backup center who, for, yes, the energy and Bobby buckets, he doesn't play defense like that.
Yeah, he's not a rim protector.
He is not a rim protector. He is not the help side defender that Giannis is. He cannot, like Giannis, in the second half of that game, again, an adjustment from Mike Budenholzer where, you know, again, credit to Brooklyn, they took Giannis out of the play. Giannis could not help and switch and get on the ball. So Brooklyn, you know, Budenholzer put him on Bruce Brown, which then got Giannis back into the action. Brooke Lopez has a block with 50 seconds and help defense. That, you know what? Yes, maybe Bobby Portis could do it, but we know that Brooke Lopez can do it. You know, we know that Giannis can do that, and so do the Bucks. So it's not an indictment on Bobby Portis. It was just, yeah, it was, guess what? The Bucks adjusting and reacting. And that's what, if you're a Bucks fan, you want to see. If they play Atlanta and Philadelphia with traditional bigs, same thing with Phoenix, and maybe to a degree with LA, Bobby Portis is going to play now. You know what I mean? Like, this was just the series that this is how it had to go. And again, going back to our Tucker conversation, JR, that's why he's here, because Brooklyn doesn't have that big of Bam Adebayo, a Joel Embiid, a Clint Capella. You know, they're built different, and the Bucks, quite frankly, were able to play two different styles, and that's just the Bucks adjusted. Bobby Portis wasn't, frankly, needed the last three games.
And you, total shout out to Brooke Lopez and Pat Connaughton in this series. Brooke Lopez, there are many points during his tenure in Milwaukee that I just expected, okay, it was fun while it lasted, but, you know, he's just eventually going to sort of fade away, or, you know, fall to the back of the bench, and maybe he gets dealt somewhere as a throw in, a part of a deal. Like, I just didn't imagine he could sustain this level of importance throughout the tenure of his career in Milwaukee. And he was sort of a revelation when they got him three seasons ago. And just defensively, obviously, he comes up with one of the biggest blocks. He was a huge factor in Game 7. He's one of the few options from beyond the arc that was working in this series. He hit 11 of 27. He's the only guy of consequence over 40% in this series, and he was monstrous. Pat Connaughton, if you had told me that he shot 29% from three-point range in that series, I would have been blown away, because it seemed like every time they needed Pat Connaughton to make a three-pointer, it was going in. A lot of misses that I guess I just wasn't registering, but he's a guy who absolutely came up big when he had to. So unlikely heroes in my mind that you'd never would have associated with the next great Bucks team, but these guys obviously... These guys obviously paved the, you know, helped make this a reality as well. I'm going to jump back to the Mike Budenholzer conversation real quickly. You know, we have to put aside the caveat that we don't ever know what the owners are thinking, and that's a wild card. Whether or not you think it's obvious Budenholzer is going to go or stay, I think it, nobody really knows, because it's all up to the owners, and they have eccentricities, and they have, you know, their own opinions on things. So ultimately, we have to sort of say we really ultimately don't know. With this series win, it would certainly seem to suggest that he's done enough to maintain, you know, his position as Bucks head coach going forward, whether or not they get to the NBA Finals, although that's pretty arguable. I mean, maybe that is still the bar that he has to reach. This is a huge feather in his cap. On the other hand, you've got a lot of people still critical of the way things ran in Game 5 when you didn't have Giannis guarding KD down the stretch, when KD had his, you know, virtuoso performance that gave the Nets a 3-2 series lead, and seemingly at the time gave the Nets enough to win that series. I don't know. I've really arrived at an I don't know phase here, because on the one hand, you cannot dispute that they made the adjustments they needed to make, completely overhauled what they were doing to win that Nets series. They did what it took to win the Nets series. On the other hand, some of the arguments, I guess, I understand them. It seems like he was maybe a step behind some of the adjustments that a lot of people were clamoring about as the series went on. But, I mean, I guess he made the last one, right? If you had told me only six guys would play meaningful minutes in Game 7, I would have said, that's a bad idea. Obviously, it worked out. So what's your recent meditation on where we stand with Mike Budenholzer?
Yeah, I mean, generally speaking, I'm not a fire the coach guy. I tend to put most things on players. And that goes for all sports. I think Mike Budenholzer put his team in a position to win the Eastern Conference semifinals, and they did that. And, you know, all the, you know, credit to the players and credit to him and his coaching staff, to be quite honest. So for me, I don't know. You know, look, I guess there's always, as you said, there's always the caveat of what does the future hold. This team is not being, you know, swept out of the Eastern Conference Finals, you know, if they're healthy. So I don't really know from here on out. Look, I do, as we started this PFE, JR, feel they're the favorite. Does that change things? Does that change the lens now? Right, where they were the underdog coming into to this, and now they are the favorite. Is that a credit to the Bucks, and that should be, as you mentioned, a feather in the cap? Or is that now a, you know, stones on their shoulder that they have to, right, that they have to carry? I don't know. So to me, I feel like you look at coaches, you know, there's so few that win championships in the NBA. There are even fewer who do it the first time around or even the second time around, meaning their jobs, right? You know, Pugs fans listening to this are like, oh, Rick Carlisle. Well, guess what? Rick Carlisle was fired twice before Dallas, you know, beat the big three, right? So there's like one Phil Jackson in Chicago. There's one Greg Popovich. You know, there's, I guess, one Pat Riley. Like there's, and that's three guys over 40 years of championship basketball. Like, so to me, JR, I guess it's a way for me to set up to say, I think Mike Budenholzer should be back. I don't know, I guess, why not. I wouldn't know why. If they're not hoisting a trophy, that would mean ownership felt they plateaued under the current coach and feel the B2C is needed. So to me, I feel like he's answered the questions and the complaints, maybe not to the point that fans feel he should have, but they're playing in the Eastern Conference Finals and that's the result. So regardless of the nitpicks or the criticisms or whatever, the result is they are in the Eastern Conference Finals after a disappointing finish in the bubble. So we'll just see, I guess, where it goes after this.
Yeah, Rick Carlisle parting ways with the Dallas Mavericks definitely got the attention of Bucks Twitter. A lot of coaches, it seems, and sort of the buzz out there as well. They're waiting to see if the Bucks opening, it becomes an opening, you know, circling it a little bit, waiting to see if that's the direction that Milwaukee's ultimately going to go. And, you know, winning this series makes that a lot less likely. But right, it's still, I guess it's still on the table, especially if they are now the favorite and they don't hit that bar. The looking back at Game 6 and Game 5, I don't want to completely shrug them off. Obviously, they're sort of forgotten with what Game 7 brought to us. But Game 5, of course, the Bucks melt down. They have a huge lead, 17-point lead in the second half that goes away. Kevin Durant goes on a magic carpet ride, and the Bucks are not able to find any sort of rhythm on offense to keep up with it. They wind up losing thanks to some Durant heroics. And then Game 6, close game until late. Chris Middleton takes over. He has his moment in the sun and helps the Bucks end up winning that game, going away at Pfizer Forum to force Game 7. Again, that becomes kind of an unfortunate footnote because that's a heck of a moment for Chris Middleton, but and they don't win the series without that game, of course. The one thing that came up a lot, and this relates to Mike Budenholzer, not attacking James Harden, who's out there on one leg with this hamstring injury. He says it's a grade 2 hamstring. Some skepticism about that because that is a heck of an injury to be able to walk on or run on, let alone play with any sort of effectiveness. He was not effective in the James Harden sense in this series, but you know, that was the thing that kept coming up. The Bucks weren't attacking him. The emblematic play in Game 5 where Giannis tries a turnaround jumper, a fading jumper in a clutch moment, and you could probably point to the free throw shooting leading to some of that, to maybe sapping some of that aggressiveness, knowing that the free throw line has been unkind to Giannis, but that just doesn't make a lot of sense. You had Harden in there, seen as a defensive liability by some people anyway, and hobbled. You would think that that would be their primary focus. How would you explain that? Like, why did it not become the thing that the Bucks did? Why would that have been such an incorrect adjustment to make, to just go straight at James Harden all the time and force the Nets to make a decision about whether to even keep him on the floor?
Well, I think Drew Holiday said it best when asked directly that question, because Drew Holiday, I think, had a step back three and a step back 17 footer that he airballed on James Harden. And Drew said, he's like, we have to go at him. And then he sort of allowed that. Well, also, they don't call fouls on James now. And look, I'll give Drew Holiday his credit. I wrote about it. You know, he Steve Nash said PJ Tucker played borderline non-basketball, and then PJ Tucker had a lot of fouls. Kevin Durant goes the line. So Drew Holiday played the game too and said the same thing. And guess what? They were able, Harden was called for fouls, whatever. But to me, first of all, that's a player thing. When I go back to coaches and players, like, that's a player. Mike Budenholzer isn't the one that has James Harden in front of him. Those are the players who have to figure that out and go ahead and do it. Now, Giannis, yeah, that fade. Look, here's the funny thing about that, Jer. Yes, I will argue that was the incorrect decision by Giannis Antetokounmpo. I think he should have gone to the block and, you know, made James move laterally or even face him up and do the bald bull, you know, Mike Tyson's punch out charge at him, right? But guess what? He did that in game 7 and James Harden knocked the ball away.
Right.
And then he tried it again. James Harden told everyone, don't come help me on Giannis, because guess what? And that's the funny thing, JR, because James Harden, we talked about this after games 1 and 2. When he decides to try, he actually is a decent defender. He was the one guarding the best players when Oklahoma City made their finals run when he was the sixth man out there. It wasn't KD. It wasn't Russell Westbrook. It was James Harden. And that's the thing. When Kevin Durant is one of the all-time best playoff shot blockers in NBA history. It's just when he that's just not what they are paid to do for 82 games, right? So, he was hurt. I'll agree with you. They probably should have tested that a little more often. But I think that's a Bucks player issue as opposed to a coaching thing. And now, real quick, because you mentioned, Giannis not on KD. I understand the metrics. I understand their stats that say Giannis on KD. The context of some of that is it's not Giannis on KD for 40 minutes. Because that's not going to go well for Giannis. Like, there were times, JR, in the run-up where Giannis had fouled him, where KD twisted him all up and got open shots. Because guess what? KD's 7 feet are not the same as Giannis's 7 feet. Giannis is a unicorn at 7 feet, 280 pounds. So if he's a unicorn, then Kevin Durant is a 7 foot. Like, what's a better mythological creature?
A minotaur.
Yeah, like Giannis is too big, and Kevin Durant's too, like, it's a duel of mythological proportions, like those players, and so you can't have Giannis guard Kevin all the time. The way the Bucks did it was probably the right way, was in spots, right? Like, what was Kevin Durant in game 6? He was 1 of 7. Like, that's kind of what you want. You want 7 to 10, like, shots, possessions, not, you know, 40 minutes. So maybe we could quibble that he should have tried it. You know, I'll go with that. But I don't think it was a wrong decision to do what they did. Because Giannis he won Defensive Player of the Year as the best help side defender in basketball. He's really, really good at that. And so why take that away, you know, and potentially lessen your team impact when you know the guy's scoring 35 anyway? You know, I think they did it right, JR. I do. I think Kevin Durant is just that. I was going to make you hit the button. He's just that freaking good. He's just that good, you know, and it took what they did. To do what they did, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense to me. I had a theory. I have a theory about James Harden that the beard is, I mean, this is not why he grew out his beard. His beard is very, you know, fashionable and cool, but it also creates kind of an aesthetic thing. When he throws his head back, every time he drives down the lane, he'll sort of throw his head back and he'll get that whistle. And I think it's because the beard makes it look like there is a lot more contact than there might be. I know that there's a lot of frustration with James Harden's game, and I think some of that is overblown, but I understand why people feel that way. Of course I do. And I think some of that is because there's a lot going on, and he's kind of got an interesting way of moving around with the basketball. It's sort of different from a lot of players, and I just think, you know, he is selling it to a pretty strong degree, but you know, he also, when he gets hit, he gets that whistle, and I know a lot of people were frustrated with that whistle. I think it was a pretty fair whistle overall. I mean, yeah, Kevin Durant got some calls. I also think Chris Middleton fishes for calls sometimes. Brooke Lopez complains about it. And I do think with them letting most of the action go in this series pretty much helped the Bucks, the more the down and dirty team that got, you know, had to do most of their work in the paint. overall view of the officiating in this series? How would you grade it?
Yeah, look, James Harden is a league MVP. Kevin Durant's a league MVP. Giannis is a league MVP. Like, they get fouls. They get calls. James Harden, those kinds of players, meaning the smaller shooter scorer types, can kind of, for lack of a better phrase, flop around and draw that stuff. Giannis gets the LeBron treatment, unfortunately. I also equate it to the Cam Newton treatment in football. Like, they're so big that they just take more of a pounding that other players wouldn't. Like, Giannis doesn't get fouls called on him that Steph Curry would. And that's, I think that's just the nature of being 7 feet and 280 pounds and built like a, you know, brick Woodhouse. It's just, that's the bad part of being that way. So yeah, I get what folks are saying. Giannis went to the line a bunch. I think he shot the free throws he should have. I'll just say that Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday, they don't really get those calls. I know Chris tries to get those. I mean, then again, he shot three free throws. He made 4-point plays. there were moments there where Chris Middleton got those looks as well. So I it's unfortunately, Jarrett's always part of the NBA narrative. I think that's one of the mistakes of that league, that officiating and calls and flops are always part of the NBA dialogue in the postseason. But I think for me, it's they just have to, you got to play through it, and you just understand. Now, look, going forward, I don't know who else is going to get that type of stuff. Maybe Kawhi and Paul George, maybe Chris Paul. I mean,
Kawhi's out though.
Yeah. If they reach the finals and he, somehow guts it out. I mean, right now, Giannis is that guy. Giannis is the MVP, the 2-time MVP and the star. So to me, if he's not going to the line 10 times a game, then that's more on the Bucks than the officials, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And before we finally let you go here, I'm just looking at these numbers. I just don't understand how the Bucks were even in this series. You had Chris Middleton shooting 41%. Right. You had Drew Holiday shooting 36%. You had not a lot of anything off the bench.
Nope.
I mean, Giannis is a special, special young man. I mean, that's number one here. That's all I got.
That's what it is. That is what it is. And it's sometimes easy to overlook consistent greatness. Look, I'm an 80s baby from Chicago. Like, Michael Jordan would score 33 points a game. And you'd be like, yeah. Like, that's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. you know what I mean? So for Giannis to put up whatever he did in the final five games of the series, 30 and 15 might have been the average in his defensive responsibilities. Like, that's not normal. That is special. And you do get desensitized a little bit about it when you get to see it every day. For whatever reason, his game is not, CJ McCollum, I know, and some other NBA players were kind of, throwing some shade at him a little bit. Of course, the analysts are as well. But no, he was, Giannis Antetokounmpo was the most valuable player, was the best player. Kevin Durant was the best player on the floor. I give him that. Giannis said it. I'll agree with it. But Giannis, he put the team on his back, and that's what those players have to do. And he did. And that is a credit to him, to kind of pull, and then credit, as we talked about, his those other guys then helped him. But then again, he still hit the hook to tie the game at 111, right, JR? Like, he still took Kevin Durant to the post. They're all about Kevin Durant. They put KD on him, and Giannis went to the post and did a baby hook to tie the game in overtime. Right, JR? Like, it's all the narrative stuff that people want to, talk about or whatever. He did it. And now, as he said, they've got to do it again for another two series.
One last thought. Joe Harris was so bad for the Nets. Like, I can't believe it. He had that wide open shot in game seven off a reset. I was positive it was going in. I turned away from the TV, certain it was going in. Goes off the side of the iron. Brook Lopez gets the rebound. Bucks got a little bit of a break there. Their own shooting woes for sure. But Joe Harris not showing up in that series was also a really big thing. Any last thoughts you have before I let you go?
No, it was an all-timer, of course. You know, now we'll see. You know, I think it was cool to see from afar the Deer District,
yes,
you know, set up and what that looked like. And obviously having, you know, seen a couple full house Pfizer Forums now the last series going forward. It was a hell of a series, and we'll see what they've got left as we reconvene for the Eastern Conference Finals here in a couple days.
Very taxing series. You saw it in game seven. Guys were just out of gas, but figure that the team that they'll face, whichever that will be, whether that's the 76ers or the Hawks, they will have gone through their own seven-game series. We will preview that series here in a couple days at the Point Forward Podcast, so stay tuned for that episode. But thanks, Jim. That's all for now. We'll catch you again in a couple days here.
Great. Talk to you then.
Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Thanks for tuning into the Point Forward Podcast. We are coming back at you in short order. Hope you're enjoying this, Milwaukee Bucks fans. It is a good, good time to be a fan of the Milwaukee Bucks. We'll catch you again real soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward Podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and JSOnline.com production.